This week at Loopcasts, I'm hosting Brian Kropp, Group Vice President and Chief of HR Research at Gartner. Hi, Brian.
Hi.
So I'll start with my questions as usual. Mm-hmm. So give me three habits that you think best affect your performance at work and keeps you sane at the same time.
That's a good question. There's a couple things that I've learned across the last 18 months that have been incredibly important. Early on in the pandemic, what I found is that I was just working all the time. Uh-huh. And there was a terrible day I had. I remember this was like in May of 2020. And I looked at my phone and there's a little app on there that like tracks how active you are. And it was like 8 o'clock at night. And it's like, you have taken 250 steps today. I was like, that's horrible. That is absolutely horrible. So one of the things that I've become much more intentional about is creating space within the day and being outside during the day and intentionally moving during the day. Mm-hmm. And what I found is that creating those breaks, creating that space, creating those situations has been hugely helpful. So that's one thing that I do, very intentional to maintain productivity, but to also be healthy and that sort of stuff. A second thing that I do, and then these are just things that across the last bit of time that I started to develop, is as the world has moved to remote and video, mm-hmm. One of the most interesting things is that when you're on video and watching yourself in a Zoom meeting, whatever it might be, mm-hmm. You think the thing that you look at is the other people on the call, but the thing that you look at the most is the picture of yourself. And you spend more time making sure that your hair looks good than you do actually paying attention to the other person or other people that are on the call. So one of the things that I do intentionally is turn off my camera for conversations with people that I know and work with all the time. And I have it on, I have it off, I have it on and I have it off, but to keep me from staring at myself.
Wow, okay.
And that's just like the reality of human beings. Like, you see a picture of yourself, you look at yourself, and you think about it in an in-person meeting, there's not a mirror in front of you that you're looking at. There's the other person you're looking at. But on a video call, there's a mirror in front of you that you're looking at all the time, right? So that's super interesting to me, kind of a second thing from that perspective. And then the third thing that I've really been thinking about from kind of an intentionality perspective is just creating the space to think and read, because it is so easy to get interrupted around stuff, mm-hmm. but just becoming much more intentional about creating the space to think and read. And interestingly, when I was going into the office, I had that space in commuting back and forth to work. Mm-hmm. And that space went away. And it took me a while to realize and appreciate that thinking space. And so how do you make sure you're creating that thinking space for you? So those are three things that I've started to do just across the last 18 months to be as effective and productive as I can be around
this.
So
where did, like, okay, so the commute went away. Where mm-hmm. did you create the space to read and think? Sundays?
So what I actually do now is in order to make that happen, it's going to sound super weird, but I built a commute to my office from my kitchen.
Right? Oh God, okay.
So what I realized I actually have to do.
Kitchen commute.
Yeah, it is create that space. And so what I will actually do often in the mornings is I'll just go outside, I'll be outside, but not have like my laptop with me, not have my phone with me, not have those other things. But you have to create that mental commute, I think, mm-hmm. just to create that space. And that's where I've created it. But I one of the other things that's so fascinating to me is you look at all of the data about how people are working now. People are just working more hours in any given day, that's stretched out, which is bad by itself when you think about it. True. But the way that can actually be really effective and really productive is if you break it into more pieces and are intentional at separating that day out. Mm-hmm. But in order for that to work, I really believe you have to create intentional breaks. You have to create moments where you intentionally turn off. You have to create moments where you intentionally put your laptop down or intentionally put your phone down, whatever it might be. And if you're not creating that intentionality, life just becomes hard, I believe. And one of the great ironies that I've really picked up on across this last bit of time, where we've had a lot more flexibility about where, when, we're working what that looks like.
True.
Flexibility without intentionality creates just an overwhelming experience. In order to really thrive in a highly flexible environment, you have to be much more intentional about decisions you're making. And you have to say to yourself, I will stop doing this now, or I will start doing this now, or I will at this time every day create a break for myself. Because without that intentionality, everything just becomes absorbed and messy and a giant just mess of stuff. And what's interesting, when we're going into an office, we had things that created intentionality for us. We had a commute. We had, you know, an end of the day. We had a lunch break. We had a coffee break. And now, like, if your coffee break is walking from wherever your laptop is to wherever you get coffee in your house, that's not a coffee break, you know? And that's where creating this intentionality is absolutely critical, I think, to thrive and be successful, both mentally, physically, spiritually, you know, with your work, with your family, with your community. You have to just be so much more thoughtful.
Oh my God, you brought so many ideas. Like, flexibility without intentionality is, you know, I will keep that phrase in mind. And then, like, you actually talked a lot about habits. Like, you need to build habits in order to, like, you know, be in control of what you're doing. And also, you talked a little bit about entropy, like how things actually tend to get out of, you know,
momentum takes over.
Yeah.
And it is, if you're not careful and thoughtful, like, momentum just can run right over you. And then you look up and a year's gone by and you're like, what happened?
Yeah. Same. I actually, like, same thing of, like, organizing our days versus, like, our lives too. I'm super curious about this. Then I will move on to my next question. Do you think, like, the leaders of today are actually aware of this, like, intentionality problem?
No, I think the vast majority, no. You know, I think there's a whole set of challenges that managers and leaders are facing that they're just horribly ill-prepared for. Mm. The way that we have always kind of developed and picked and created our managers and leaders has been the people that have been the best at doing that job before, and then we let them manage other people who are doing that job. And not just because of a realization that we're all much more human, we need to think about the experiences that the people that happen to be working for us are having, understanding their lives, their experiences, their health, their mental health. It's not just that we've learned across the last, you know, year and a half or so, but there's this other factor that's going on, which is a lot of what a manager has historically done is being automated away. So you think about, like, scheduling, you think about expense report management, you think about even feedback in a lot of ways, coaching, development, more of that's being automated or replaced by peers doing that work or other things like that. And the combination of those two factors really tells me that you don't need managers that are just good at the tasks. You need managers that are good at the empathy and understanding people.
Wow. Okay.
And you look at our current managerial population, and as best as we can figure, about, you know, 40% of or so managers have the skills and capabilities to actually make that transition. But, you know, there's only about 30% or so of all managers who have the skills and the desire to make that transition. And I think one of the biggest things that will happen across the next handful of years is that we're going to have to see a wholesale change in a lot of our managers and leaders, because a different type of manager leader is going to be needed to be successful going forward. It's not going to be a task manager. It's not going to be somebody who's been great at that job. It's going to be more of like a counselor or a social worker to help people understand and navigate through the tensions and challenges that exist in work and in life. And that's not what a lot of our managers look like today.
That's so true.
You know, and I think that is a really underreported and understood shift that companies are going to have to navigate through to have successful managers and leaders in the future.
Okay, so maybe coming back to that, I'll skip to my third question because I think this is related. So there is a current time affluence crisis, I think, because our, like, how do we manage our calendars? It's quite crazy. Like, there are meetings after meetings, like we just discussed. So do you have rules and routines like that help you keep a healthy time affluence?
Yeah. There's two things that I do that I think are really helpful from that perspective. One is you have to use your calendar as your friend.
Okay.
I think, and make meetings with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds really weird when you say it that way. But one of the things that I do is I block out about an hour and a half to 2 hours every day on my calendar that is time that's booked. Because the way that other people will use your calendar is to say, oh, something's open, therefore I can, that's time for me to take.
I totally agree, yeah.
And unless you say, well, I'm going to take some of my own time,
mm-hmm.
then all of that other work that you have to do ends up occurring at 8 o'clock at night or 6 o'clock in the morning, which is not healthy at all in the short run or long run from that perspective. Sometimes you have to do it, but it's not healthy long. So the first thing is book time with yourself. The second thing, as much as you possibly can, make out all hour-long meetings, just 45-minute long meetings. And you can make that default occur within Microsoft, where you can actually change it to default to 45-minute meetings rather than hour-long meetings. And that way, like if the meeting's running long, you have additional 15 minutes at the end of it. And if not, you have those 15 minutes to catch up on different things. And there's this weird reality of human beings where if the meeting is booked for 30 minutes, even if you get done with everything in 15, there's a sense of like, oh, we should use the last 15 because that's how much time we set aside. And so by making meetings longer, you actually use up all that time. And so by making them shorter, but creating additional buffer space on the back end, you can use it if you need it. But so much of that is being willing to say, hey, we talked about what we needed to talk about. We made the decision that we needed to make. We're done. We don't need to use up all of the time, and that's okay. But being willing to say that and use your calendar to help you with that. Otherwise, it is too easy, especially as people move into more senior roles, to wake up in the morning and be like, I don't even have time for lunch today.
Yeah.
And you know that doesn't work for someone's well-being at all. But using your calendar to your advantage, I think is incredibly important. And what you can do with that calendar is, and those meetings, go in and write down the stuff that you need to get done during that time period. Because otherwise other things will just seep in, but make that meeting with yourself a calendar appointment to do a particular set of activities that you need to engage in. If it's provide feedback on something, read something, whatever it might be, but use your calendar to make meetings with yourself.
So your meetings with yourself, do they happen at a certain time during the day or?
I move them around. But once you've got that time, then it's, you can move things in there. You can change it around if you want to, but it forces that discipline of creating that time for you to do things. And sometimes I have to move them because there's other meetings that I have to have with people that they can't make that time work. But I don't cancel it. I just move it. And right. that's what works. Now, some people are more productive in the morning, afternoon. They need that time in different ways. And different people can be successful in different ways there. But you have to have meetings with yourself.
I love that. So it goes back to intentionality mm-hmm. over and over. Love that. Okay. When you feel overwhelmed or unfocused or have lost your focus temporarily at work, what do you do?
There's a couple things. There's a lot of interesting research here that shows that most people, in terms of really being productive and thoughtful, the length of time that they can do it in one stretch is actually quite low. Mm-hmm. It's not hours, it's minutes in many cases. And, you know, maintaining really high levels of productivity for more than 60 or 75 minutes in a row is actually quite rare. It's really hard to do without being draining and exhausting. But those moments, and they happen to everybody, me in particular, it's okay to go and then listen to music for a while.
Okay.
It's okay to go and like take your dog for a walk. It's okay to do those things. And one of the realizations and mindset shifts that we have to make in terms of ourselves and being leaders in our organizations is that sitting at your desk at home or at work, your virtual desk, whatever it might be, and just banging away the keyboard is not being productive.
Right.
Right. What you actually have to do is think about what you're doing, and it's okay to take breaks. You can actually be more productive by working fewer hours if you create more separation and breaks during that time period to give your mind and your body a time to relax, reflect, and think differently. This idea of our most productive employees just work harder and work longer, it is just not borne out by any evidence whatsoever.
And also,
there might be a couple of people that work that way and are better, but that is the exception. That is not the norm. You can be more productive by working less time if you create space for you within the time that you're working to think and reflect and rest.
Yeah. Do you have specifically something that you do when something like that happens? Like, I just heard a bark. Like, do you take
care of your house? So we got, at the start of COVID, we got one beagle. And then kind of halfway through, my daughter, God bless her, is as relentless as can be, which is a trait that will work out well for her across the rest of her life. And for probably about 3 months straight every day, she would come and be like, "Daddy, I want a beagle puppy. Daddy, I want a beagle puppy." And I was like, "We just got a dog. It'll be okay." She's like, "I want a beagle puppy." And her persistence for 3 months actually got us to finally get her that puppy. And she's been great. She takes it for a walk. She feeds it. She does everything. It's been a wonderful experience for her. But sometimes the dog wants to join me in the office. And so now that she's back at school, one of the things that I'll do during the day for those breaks is actually take the dog for a walk. And, you know, it's nice because you get to see outside, you get to know what's going on. And one of the things that I found in particular is when you've got your normal check-in calls with people that you work with on an ongoing basis, is just make those walking calls. Just walk your dog while you're talking with them. It gives the ability to be outside. It breaks it up. It actually makes it a much more relaxing conversation. And it's okay to tell the other person that you're walking and you're outside while you're talking with them. You know, if it is an ongoing person that you work with, all that you're doing is letting them know that you're a human being and you do the normal things that human beings do.
And like using those two things attached to your body.
Yeah, it's like, you know, we have this amazing ability to like actually move, take advantage of it, rather than assuming like productivity is only measured by the, you know, the number of times you bang on your keyboard during the day.
Yeah, I will remember this. This was powerful. Okay, so I'll jump to another question. So what's an unusual habit or an absurd thing that you love?
Unusual things that I love. That's a good question. As I think about like how that plays out within kind of how I live and take those sorts of approaches, one of the things that I found for me, I've just been engaging more and more in, is thinking about what it actually means to be effective with your time and useful with your time. And what this has led me to start doing is thinking about when are people more productive during the day, and me experimenting with different times to work during the day and just try to create that flexibility and variability, and not just in terms of places where I'm working. So it's not working 9 to 5, but sometimes being at your kitchen, sometimes in your dining room, sometimes in your desk sorts of things, but spending more time thinking about working at different times. And what I'm really fascinated by is all of this new technology that's able to track your productivity and your performance based upon when you're working and just trying to understand that own signature for yourself. So I've been just playing around with different times to work and to see like, what does that actually mean for me? Because I believe that, you know, as we move into this hybrid world and it appears incredibly likely that post-pandemic, whenever that actually occurs and whatever that timing looks like, the vast majority of companies are going to be having people work in a hybrid sort of way. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a very uneven experience in terms of different people doing different things. And if we're going to be advising companies and executives, like we do through Gartner, on how to make that work, I want to be able to have experimented with it in a variety of different ways to see what it's actually like. Just to increase my own understanding, awareness, and appreciation of what that is. But that's one thing that has been a little bit unusual. The other thing that has been a little bit unusual is my three kids all are fencers. And they love fencing. And so for the last several years, I take them to their fencing school and like they're there. And then again, they've been bugging me nonstop. It's like they want me to fence with them. So I've finally given in and I've now started doing that. And what's really tragic, my kids are 15, 10, and 8. And the 15-year-old can beat me and he's like super athletic, so that's fine. But the 8 and 10-year-old are better at it than I am. So it's like I've gotten to this moment in life where I'm like, huh, there's things that your kids are going to do that are going to be, that they're better at than you. And I'm just getting a very early glimpse into what that looks like with this experience of late.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. I'm just curious, by the way, like what was the best place and time to work so far? Kitchen at 2 a.m.?
For me, it's actually sometime between like 9 and 11 in the morning.
Okay.
Is what I find. Because if it's really early, then I just don't have the energy yet to get the day going.
Okay.
And then what I've also found is that after lunch, that's when I most need to go out for a walk or do other stuff. Mm-hmm. And so just that morning time period.
That sandwich between them, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And then usually sometime between like, then across the afternoon, I've got time to reflect and think about different things. And then there's usually another hour, I don't know, like 5 to 6, 5:30 to 6:30, somewhere in there, where I can actually get a lot done because I've had time to think and process across what's going on. But it's those two blocks for me that tend to work the Perfect. Best. And that afternoon block is not consistently high performing.
Okay, same here, not an idol. Okay.
Yeah.
So how big is the team you are working with currently?
So we work within our HR practice, we've got hundreds of people scattered across the globe. So we've got people, you know, Australia, Europe, India, across North America. And then we've got clients as well that are truly scattered across the globe. Okay. So just trying to, you know, work with all these different people at all these different times. Yeah.
Okay. If you were to describe your employee experience at Gartner, what would you give me in three words as a good summary of your employee experience?
These are the things that I think describe working at Gartner the most. And I'll provide a little bit of detail. So I'm going to cheat. I'll provide a little bit of detail after each one from that perspective. Creative.
Okay.
And then I'm going to hyphenate one, which is intellectually challenging.
Okay.
and thoughtful.
Okay.
The intellectually challenging one, I think, is really important because what we really have to do is come up with answers to the toughest questions that executives are working on.
Right.
And if you are the type of person that really enjoys thinking hard about those problems, debating those problems, thinking about a problem from a different angle, trying to find the data that says if going left or going right is the better answer, there's so much of that, which is great. And if you're the type of person that thrives and really enjoys debating that issue, then it's a great place. Like if you're the type of person that went to grad school and loved debates in grad school, it's great.
Perfect.
Creative in the sense of we are tackling problems that people have never answered before. Mm-hmm. And so you have to come up with different ideas and different solutions to those challenges, which really requires a lot of creativity. And then the last part around the thoughtful part, one of the things that I think is really important is that we spend a lot of time thinking about each other, how we can support each other, how we can help each other, how we can partner with each other, how we can collaborate with each other. And so really being thoughtful of each other, I think, is the third piece that describes that experience.
And are there any, you know, best practices you impose on yourself to keep your team's well-being at bay?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that's really important here is, you know, we spend so much time thinking about the rational components of work. Like, what are the tasks we have to do? What are the things we have to do? What is the next meeting we have to get to? And so on. And we don't spend nearly enough time thinking about the social components of what work looks like and what building those relationships look like. Mm-hmm. And as we've been in this remote world, and we largely have teams that want remote together. So a lot of the social relationships are already built. But as those teams have changed, as new teams come, as it's more hybrid, the thing that I think is absolutely critical for leaders and managers to be aware of is those social connections. Mm-hmm. And that's not like another Zoom happy hour. That's not what I mean by that. But being aware of those concerns, those issues, those desires that people have. So like, for example, you know, a couple of years ago, for people on my team, for, you know, holidays, I got them all a bottle of wine, right? And I was like, oh, that's, you know, I was being super nice. I was getting like a nice bottle of wine. Like, who wouldn't like that? And what I realized is that is a nice thing to do, but it's not thoughtful from that perspective.
Okay.
And so what I actually do now is talk to people across the course of the year to try to understand what are their personal interests? What are the things that they care about? And rather than getting them a bottle of wine for the holidays, what I actually do now is just make donations to charities that they care about.
Oh, wow.
And so, for example, there's someone on my team. She was in the U.S. Navy. Mm-hmm. And so this last year, I made a donation to a charity that helps provide women that were in the Navy training to do new jobs and job skill training. And, you know, that's what I did rather than get her something. And that's a way to build a social connection where it shows, like, hopefully that you kind of understand what people care about, what's important to them, and supporting them in the things that they care about in their personal lives, not just giving them things, I think helps build deeper social connections with people, deeper emotional connections with people than what I've come to realize is a nice gift, but kind of a generic gift from that perspective.
Okay. Even when you're far away, like connecting on a personal basis is so important.
Yeah.
That's what keeps the team together, even when the teams shift. I agree with you.
It takes more time to do that, but it's just the right thing to do from that perspective.
Okay. Do you have like a surprising well-being hack that's worked within the organization so far? Like, I don't know, sharing our puppies' photos or like something like that?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of things that I think are fun to do from that perspective. And then I'll tell you a funny story I heard from another company that might be interesting for people. One of the things that we do sometimes is for smaller team meetings, we'll make everybody go outside for those meetings. Okay. And then what everybody has to do during that meeting is take a picture of the funniest thing that they saw while they were outside.
Okay.
And then you just send that to each other, right? But ways to make, you know, we've got all this technology at our fingertips. Uh-huh. We've got phones that we can do these calls from. Like, you can do your Teams meeting from a phone. Take advantage of that, of, you know, going to different spaces and doing different things. So, like, incorporating that within those team conversations. Then there's another one that I heard from a French company. That I'm not sure if this is a good idea or not, but it's an interesting idea.
Are you going to raclette and fondue? Hopefully not.
Yeah.
What's happening?
What they actually have done is that they realize that a lot of people listen to music while they're at work.
Oh, okay.
And so what they have actually done is created a whole set of Spotify stations that employees can listen to other people's music to say, like, hey, here's what I'm listening to.
Wow, like, that's cool.
You can listen to my music. And they took it one step further, which is within your playlist that you create, you can actually then make shout outs and acknowledgements to other people. So you can be like, here's like the three songs that I'm listening to, and I want to make a special recognition of so-and-so help me with that project. So when you're listening to other people's playlists, you actually then can recognize other people and provide kind of that positive feedback to other people. which I actually think is kind of a cool idea. I haven't done that yet, but the idea of how can you incorporate fun things that people are doing anyway, so like the playlist, with other things where you can acknowledge them. It's a really interesting idea that I think
authentic. It's kind of, I like it.
Kind of cool to explore from that perspective.
Yeah. If there could be a gigantic billboard anywhere with anything on it, what would it say and why?
There's too many people, I think, measure success by winning or losing.
Mm-hmm.
And
binary, right? It's binary.
Yeah, and that's important. Yeah. You know, and if it's a sporting event, then yes, that matters and that's important. But I don't think that's how you should evaluate things. I think you should evaluate things on whether or not you're making progress. Mm-hmm. And, you know, are you getting better? Are you learning more? Are you just making progress?
Definition of success. Cool.
I believe a much more valuable way, a rewarding way to think about things.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, is it just progress? And it doesn't have to be in the same direction all the time, on the same things all the time. It's not about becoming a champion on things, but it's like, are you just moving forward? And you know, that's how I've tried to think about things. You know, as much as I can, and I'm not perfect at it by any stretch, but just, are you making progress?
Yeah, I think this would also make you happy, because like, you're changing the definition of success from a binary point of view to a more, you know, process-based point of view, which I like.
And just improvement, you know? It just seems like such a better way to think about, you know, learning about work, about relationships, about anything. It's just, are you making progress?
Right. And what is one of the best or most worthwhile investments you've ever made?
Well, the most worthwhile investments that I've ever made, that I think there's a couple that I'll highlight. One is a really comfortable chair.
Okay.
There's so much time, as much as you try to create breaks and that sort of stuff, that we're still, in front of a desk, in front of a place, but making sure that it's comfortable and relaxing from that perspective. So that's one of the most worthwhile investments I think I made. I think the second one is, and it's been a huge blessing and a silver lining in a terrible cloud across the last 18 months, is making the investment of being able to spend more time with my family.
Mm.
And not forgetting about that as we move into whatever a post-pandemic world looks like. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had a chance to talk with friends of mine, and one of the things that consistently comes up is, most of last year, people were able to spend more time with their children.
Right.
And what I worry about a lot is, as schools reopen, as kids' activities start up again, as the pace of the world picks back up, that investment that we've been able to make during that time and building those deeper relationships with our immediate families gets lost, and we're not able to maintain that. And that time is just precious, and I don't say we want to, like, yay, let's have another pandemic so we're all stuck again, right? Like, I don't mean that by any stretch, but just this idea of making sure that we're not forgetting about that and we're continuing to make those investments of time within those relationships to continue to build on them.
In my mind, that goes back to the intentionality you mentioned in the beginning of the talk. So yeah, intentionally making that time for the family. Mm-hmm. So what are some bad recommendations you hear in your profession? And what would you tell people instead?
Yeah, you know, there's all sorts of mistakes that and bad advice that I hear. And I think what a lot of that comes down to is work harder always equals results.
Mm-hmm.
Working harder is a way to get burnt out.
Okay.
What you have to think about is, how are you more creative in terms of how do you work? How do you figure out what are all of the things that that actually do matter and what doesn't matter? Okay. You know, one of the, I remember this conversation that I had with someone that I was working for many years ago. And she told me this thing that at the time felt wrong. And I've since come to appreciate, I do believe it's wrong. And what she said is, as a leader, you have to make sure that you do everything and everything gets done well. Hmm. And I was like, that sounds horrible, like, and impossible. Because if you're doing everything, then you're just killing yourself. And you're also not creating the space for anybody else to be successful. And so what you actually need to do as you're thinking about that is make sure you're creating the space for others,
right?
By defining what role you're gonna play, but also being clear about what other people can do and what other roles other people can play, and trusting them. Because, you know, as a leader, if you say, I own everything and I'm responsible for everything, that actually creates an environment where everyone that works for you is like, well, I can't make a decision until that person says something. And that person's always going to double check what I'm going to do. So they're never going to trust me. But it's creating the space and having the trust in the people that you're going to work with, I think makes life so much better, not only for you, but for them as well. Mm-hmm. But this idea that you have to be involved in everything, like, it's just crazy. There's no CEO that I've ever talked to who says, I own everything. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a conversation I had with the CEO a while ago, which just really struck with me. Super smart guy. And I asked him about, I was talking with him about a couple of things, and there's two things that he shared with me that were really striking. One, I asked him, like, there's so much stuff that can go wrong when right. you're running a big, you know, big team, a big company, whatever it might be. And there's so many problems that emerge all the time. I was like, how do you deal with that? And he's like, I just can't let them knock me down, because every time, if I got bothered by everything that went wrong, my whole day would be bothered.
Right.
Right. I just have to let it go and accept that some stuff's not going to work, and that's okay. And then the other thing that he said that was really interesting, which was, as a leader, your job isn't to make every decision and make sure that everything works out well. Your job as a leader is actually to figure out what are the best lottery tickets to buy. And I was like, what in the world does that mean? And he goes, you know, as a leader, there's very few decisions that you make
right.
that actually impact what's going on today. There's some, and you need to focus on those and be aware of those and pay attention to those for sure. But the majority of the decisions that you make won't have a real impact for 2, 3, 4, 5 years out. So you're essentially just buying lottery tickets that may pay off at some point in the future. And so how do you make sure that you're buying good lottery tickets? And I thought that was really interesting, because what it actually does is reframes your thinking from, you know, I have to make this decision, I have to make that decision. And one of the other thoughts, the things that he added to it was, you know, for 90% of the decisions that you make, it doesn't really matter if you say left or right. Like, it's like 1 or 2 percentage points at the margin. Like, it's not going to matter. But it's figuring out what are those decisions that are more important and thinking about those. And I think that is such valuable advice that's really stuck with me, which is spend time and get invested on the big decisions that are like the more important lottery tickets to buy. But don't worry so much at all about, you know, all of the other stuff, because it's probably not going to make a difference.
This really spoke
to
me.
Don't get worried about it.
Yeah, I think I will write that somewhere here in the back, you know. By the right lottery tickets. Oh my God, this was amazing. Wow. Okay. One final question for you today. Mm-hmm. In the last 5 years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
Patience.
Wow. Okay. Why?
You know, one of the things that I've come to appreciate, and I guess that falls into a mindset category, is not everything is going to be done exactly how you want it done or exactly how you would do it. And that's okay. And being patient with people to give them the, and be patient with yourself as well, to create the time and space to let them figure out what works best for them. And to and I think part of that patience is to go in with an assumption that people have positive intent and that they're trying to do the right thing. And I think that holds true for the vast, vast majority of people. And for the handful that doesn't, it's worth making that mistake for the benefit that you get from everyone else. But if you go in with positive intent that other people are trying to do the right thing and being patient with them to give them the chance to do the right thing, or patient with them explaining with them why another approach might be better, rather than assuming that they're doing it the wrong way or some other approach, I think it's just, it's something that I've learned the value of, not only in terms of the relationship with them, but just in terms of your own mental health, that sometimes time does solve things, and letting some things play out is actually okay. It becomes hard because at some point then you have to make some more difficult, harder calls because it hasn't played out well. But what I found is by being patient, more things will work out than not. And for those things that don't work out, at least you've given it the space to try. And, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but at least you've learned by being more patient from that perspective.
Wow. Okay. Amazing, amazing episode. Thank you so much, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
This was Brian Kropp for Loopcasts.